A while back, I went to get a life insurance policy the old-fashioned way. Physical exam, blood work, the whole thing. They turned me down. My numbers were bad. Now that rejection ended up being one of the best things that has happened to me. It kicked the health journey that I am still on. Down 30 pounds and counting. But I realize not everybody's in that situation. Maybe you've just been putting it off. Maybe the process always seemed like too much of a hassle. That's exactly what Ethos fixes. Ethos helps you find life insurance completely online, no medical exam, just a few simple health questions. Get a quote in seconds. Apply in minutes. Same day coverage up to $3 million in protection. And some policies are as low as 30 bucks a month. There's no excuse to keep waiting on this one. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Free quote at ethos.com/Zabe. ethos.com/Zabe. Application times may vary. Rates may vary. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Charge, it's great to have you back on the show. How is Utah right now? Hot?
Hot, steamy, but it's breaking. I think the summer swelter is coming to an end, and we're getting reasonable temperatures. And it's still, even when it's hot, though, I will take the dry 102 over the moist DC 92 in a second.
Ooh. Were you in our area recently?
No, you know, I was only there for the epic Holy Fuck concert, but I've been there in the summer, and it's dewy in D.C.
Oh, it sucks. It's the worst. and it's all over the East Coast. It's all over parts of the South as well. My friend Jason Autumn from Wisconsin came. He had to go to Raleigh for a work conference, and he texted me to go, "This swamp ass weather is the worst." And I said, "Welcome to the big leagues." Because occasionally in Wisconsin, they'll say, "Oh, gee, it's really humid today." And I'm like, "You don't even know humid. Wait till you get somewhere like this, then you will know humid." All right. Paul Charchian from Fantasy Football World is joining us here on the ZabeCast. Throw him a follow. I just retweeted your guy's link to the new feed, basically.
Thank you.
Shut up, YouTube. The autoplay on YouTube is fucking killing me right now. Okay, calm down, everybody. We're going to edit this out in post-production. So Charch is joining me today, and I need you to know something. He's got a new website, a new RSS feed for his fantasy show, and he's got the same great content he's always had. It's called Fantasy Football World. Follow him on Twitter at FF World Show. That's FF World Show, and the website is ffworldshow.com for those of you that still believe in, you know, websites. So there you go. Shows have already been up and running. How many for the 2026 fantasy season do you guys have in the can already?
We only have the one where we record on Fridays. And so we'll be recording again this Friday. But Zabe, I got to tell you about this. And you were no small part of this. You last week, we broke the news right here on this very podcast about the rebirth of fantasy football world. And we are one episode in, Zabe. That episode reached on Apple Podcasts. It reached sports podcast number 31 and fantasy podcast number 7 through one episode, Zabe. That's the power of the Zabecast right there.
Well, it was, I know I take a little bit of credit, but it's you. It's the power of you, my friend.
Well, and it was so heartening. Now, okay, that's a very material answer to, like, how does it feel to have the podcast back with all my co-hosts? It's fantastic. But the thing I did not expect, Zabe, as we were tweeting to promote it and let people know about the return of the show, is how many people missed it and how really, really glad they are that it's back. I you know, you don't know. You do the podcast and 99% of your listeners do not respond, reply, unless you screw something up or whatever. But to have people that are, you know, hundreds of responses from people that are just so excited that we're back. And it's just so heartening in a way that, you know, for all the things social media is bad about, the fact that I can communicate and hear from my listeners and they have the opportunity to tell me that it means a lot that we're back. God, it's just, oh, it felt so good. It felt so good to be back, Zabe.
That is great. And you know what? Those dummies at that old company should have let you buy back your RSS feed at a reasonable price, because now you're proving you don't really need it back. You're going to rebuild it entirely from scratch, bigger and better. And so they're just going to sit on a depreciating asset till it's dead. So good job, lawyers. Well,
yeah, there's plenty I'd like to say right now, but I'm not.
I don't get it. Let me say it. You don't have to say it. Okay. Before we get going here, I have a list of topics that is presented in what I call, maybe Jeopardy style, okay? A little bit cryptic, hopefully catchy. They are as follows. Fantasy emasculation, the scarlet watermark, NFL quarterback development sucks, 74%, red flag keep away, Ross Tucker, the stench of Rossini, Berman's ass, bummer Bumble, and a hell made out of grass. Those are the topics. Nice. I will type them into our chat.
Do I get to choose?
You can pluck them off the pile as you see fit.
I want to hit the... I will take the, was it Scarlet Letter?
The Scarlet Watermark.
The Scarlet Watermark for 500.
The Scarlet Watermark is what is going to become of this new policy by the people at Claude. AI agent Claude or service. What do you call Claude? It's an agent.
Service works. Sure.
Okay. It's an AI platform, which is Anthropic, right? Anthropic's the company.
Yep. That's the company that owns Claude. Yep.
Their agent that does stuff for you online is called Claude. How they came up to that, who knows? I'm sure it focus group tested really, really well. As you know, plagiarism is kind of the thing of the past. Who wants to plagiarize? But you just have AI write your shit for you. Students have known about this since AI started to become a thing, and teachers have been employing various methods to combat AI-generated written work. Claude has now gone a step further by saying, to help those who are combating AI work, we're going to embed into every piece of Claude-generated writing an invisible watermark that will travel with the words in an invisible way when they are copied, cut, and pasted elsewhere. This is something that is not discernible to the end user. It's a digital watermark that they are giving out the key to go find it to people who, I guess, subscribe to Anthropic to say, hey, I need that key to find out, was this written by AI or not? And on the surface, Church, it seems like, okay, that kind of makes sense. But already there is a fascinating and pretty ferocious pushback on it from a bunch of people for some reasons I never considered in the first place. Starting with, hey, AI is a tool. Are you going to get mad at somebody in a wood shop that he used a drill press to create this thing for you? It's a tool. You want them to do it by hand, it'll take a lot longer and it will cost more money. Why do you want that to be the case? The tool argument is a one that also is valid to me. The second argument that I think is persuasive is that the asterisk of doom, or the watermark of doom, if you will, the scarlet watermark of AI, could seep into your work and your writing in ways you didn't even see how it got in there. Because there's one five-word phrase that you read somewhere, or you wrote, or you cut and pasted, and then you said, okay, this is the basis of my essay, but I'm going to rewrite it and I'm going to edit it to my own voice and my own conclusions. If you miss one watermark, you get the scarlet letter. And you are likely, according to the current way things are being done, to fail your class by being deemed a cheater. I would be, as a student, charged, panicked as hell, thinking, how can I keep an invisible scarlet watermark out of all of my work so that I don't get screwed by something I can't see, can't appeal to, and yet somebody certainly believes I'm a cheater? The floor is yours.
Okay, several things. Number one, teachers are viewed as the victims of this whole AI thing with people, kids copying and pasting in essays. Let's keep in mind, nobody talking about this. Guess who's grading the papers, Zabe?
AI.
That's right. The teachers are using AI to grade the papers. They're cheating as well. Nobody talking about that. The teachers here are not faultless. Many of them grinding these papers, because that was a lot of slog, right? Going through and reading 14-page papers. Now, AI does it for you in 30 seconds, and it's good. And that, so the teachers are not just victims here.
Fair.
Number two, if any attempt to digitally watermark is very likely to get undone by impressive hacker engineers. You're going to be able to take your watermarked text, dump it into some hacker's program that you'll find on GitHub, and that will strip out. It's still ones and zeros. It'll find the watermark and it'll strip it out. I don't believe there's ever going to be a scenario where Anthropic or Claude or anybody else or Gemini is going to be able to watermark this so well in such a fashion
that
somebody can't take the zeros and ones out of the watermark.
But it could also be injected. It could be injected as poison into somebody else's work, almost like a hacker. So if you want to get a better grade in your literature class and you have a way to get into other kids' laptops, put that poison asterisk in there. They might all fail. You suddenly might be the top of the class. I'm just envisioning potential scenarios. At the end of the day, who is the referee on whether something is AI?
It's going to be, that line's going to get very gray, Zabe. I'm impressed you're thinking this far down the road, because even if you don't think you're using AI, and this is the point you're getting at, you could be using AI. You don't even know it. You know, it's so hard to know what's generated from AI and what's not, that you could actively be trying not to be using AI. But
right,
in the course of information gathering, because you're not going to the Encyclopedia Britannica from, or the World Book edition 1982 and flipping through pages, that wherever you got your content, that was AI generated to begin with. And you just don't know. it's gonna be very, very hard to not to know the difference. And you are exactly correct that that's going to be a problem. You mentioned this is just another tool, like a router or a sander in a carpenter's.
I wouldn't say it's just another tool. I would say it's a tool. Very powerful, but yes, also controversial and also still flawed in many ways.
Yeah. Well, and maybe forever flawed, but it's becoming less and less flawed with time as these continue to get better and better. Now, the distinction between your example is I'm a cabinet maker and Zabe orders new cabinets for me and I show up with a bunch of them. There's a presumption that I used a router at some point and that you would want me to use a router.
Yes.
Now, if I'm turning in my schoolwork, there is a presumption that I wrote it unless I say otherwise. You know, if I disclose that I use AI, fine, you know, then it's all above board. But the presumption in an academic setting is that you did it yourself unless you disclose that. I think that's the difference here with a carpenter is there's the presumption that the carpenter used tools. You know, why wouldn't you use a tool? I don't expect you to be out there with a handmade owl or, you know, I think that's the distinction. Is what is the presumption of the
genuine
product?
Original work? Right. By the way, a handmade owl would look really weird. A handmade bird. Hoo, 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 hoo.
Not that kind of owl. A-W-L.
An owl.
An owl.
not a handmade owl. Yeah. Well, look, okay. these are the new frontiers that are going to have to be navigated because there is no rule book and there is no sense of, well, what is or is not acceptable. Was the calculator viewed the same way in mathematics when
Hell
it first
yeah,
came
it was.
On?
You know it was, right? You know the calculator was forbidden in math classes for a long time. And
but,
then
yeah,
it got to the point where scientific calculators were handed out at the beginning of the class. You're going to need this.
Right.
So here's your TI 7800 for you to use in this class.
Right. So there's no virtue in hand figuring out the square root of a 7-digit number. You could, it'll take you longer, but why do it if there's a button on your calculator that can do it in a second? I always thought the biggest part of math, once you got up to higher levels, was understanding how to solve a mathematical problem. And so therefore, the grunt work, the scut work of doing the actual ones and zeros and divide by this, better left to a machine like a calculator to do that. You still need to, you had to understand how to hop from one lily pad of the mathematical question to the next one to get to the other side, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Alex, and, I will take.
Yes.
Red flag. It's red flag keep away.
Red flag keep away
for 500.
The NFL recently announced in a quiet announcement that they were changing the rules of challenges with the red flag this year to allow a coach to designate someone else on their team to actually do the challenges. But it had to be designated before the season, and it had to be a season-long thing. So you can't just change it willy-nilly. I said immediately, I'm like, this is going to be, if you could give me this job, I would outperform all but three coaches in the league. One of those being probably Sean McVay, the fucking Rain Man. I would do better because I know you and I, Charge, and everyone else who sits on the couch and watches a metric ton of this football that we love understands which plays do and do not get overturned. We know it because we see this all day, every day in a whole bunch of games. Coaches don't see what typically does get flipped or not. They're going, and also they're conflicted by emotion. They're like, oh, that was a big play. I called Red Rocket scat under Z perfectly, and the guy hit the receiver, and he got his feet in bounds. Yes, that play worked. Oh, it's for 28 yards on 3rd and 10. I need it. And so they throw the red flag because they're emotionally invested in a way that us on the couch are like, eating our popcorn, like, that second foot's not in. They're not going to give it to him. And sure enough, we're right more often than not. Well, it was asked to Matt LaFleur, one of the worst challenge guys in the league, whether or not he would surrender the red flag. And he said the following. Now he's going to keep the flag, but he says, jokingly, quote, probably should give it up based on past action. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. It's like saying, I know I suck at it, but mine. It's my flag right here. What do you think, Church?
Properly done. There should be an employee that is in the box watching all the monitors available, including the ones that we don't get, all the views we don't get on TV, all of the internal cameras that the stadium has got, all the monitors. There's one person up in the box. There should be one person at field level who is not the head coach. The head coach has got a lot going on in that moment. And very emotional, right? And many head coaches call their own plays. They got to be thinking about the next play call. They got a lot to deal with in that moment. There should be one person on the sidelines whose only job is to drop the red flag. And that most of that decision should come from that person up in the booth who knows all the rules back and forward and has got all of the visual evidence and can make a quick decision. And all that guy on the sideline does is drop the red flag or not.
What if I told you this was tried here in Washington back 20 years ago when Gibbs returned to the NFL? Gibbs, after 1 year, realized that, okay, maybe I'm not great at challenging calls. So he designated a guy up in the booth. I'm going to have to call Andy Pollin and ask him who the guy's name was, because I know Andy would remember. He did this. He said, okay, we're going to let this guy decide. Well, sure enough, after a couple of weeks, old coach Joe 2.0 went right back to challenging shit that was getting overturned or getting denied left and right. And we're like, what the hell? And Gibbs had to admit, yeah, I sort of took back the responsibility for that, because coaches want that control. It just didn't work. Here's the other thing. It's not just winning a challenge that's important. It's understanding what is worth challenging.
Very true.
With time, score, and situation in the game.
Yeah.
Because even though you may win a 3-yard completion challenge on 1st and 10, if you're at your own 25 in the third quarter, it's not worth risking not winning that for such a paltry gain. But sometimes coaches are caught up in the, I know this was wrong, I want to win the challenge, and they don't. And now, holy shit, you just lost a timeout in the second half, which is like gold. And all of your end-of-game scenarios are now crippled with one less timeout.
100% correct. Situation is very important. And that's all can be done real time and mathematically. There's the real time feed comes into the computer for this guy who's sitting up in the booth, and it tells you what the differential, what is the win differential of this moment of changing a 3rd and 1 into a 3rd and 6? How does that change my win differential? Does it change it by 8% or 18%? Right? Those are really important things, but it can all be done mathematically and ahead of time. You don't have to do finger in the wind.
We could use AI. We could use AI with a computer and a third party that holds the flag that says challenge this.
Yes. Exactly. Now, what I would really like to have done with the red flag, I'd like him to shoot it out of a cannon. Why are we just dropping the red flag?
Okay. I'm glad you said that. My biggest pet peeve is they apparently don't let the coaches launch the red flag onto the field. They're told if you throw it too far, you could actually get an unsportsmanlike conduct. So that's why they drop it. Like that's some kind of socialite woman going, oh, I dropped my handkerchief. Who can pick up off the ball for me? When in reality, I want that coach to just rear back and go, yeet.
Absolutely.
I want that red flag arcing its way all the way into the middle of the field between the hash marks.
Do you remember 25-ish years ago, some player There was a penalty flag. This was not a red flag. There's a yellow flag.
Orlando Brown got hit by Jeff Triplett's flag right in the eye.
Remember.
And,
yes,
well,
in
it was
the
a big
eye.
Deal. Yeah,
it was.
Jeff Triplett was like a Silver Star winner serving our military back in the day. I forget what war he was in. And he's a good man, but he was a shit ref. Like, Jeff Triplett ref games were always a wild ride of incompetence. And he fired his flag, which has either popcorn, unpopped popcorn kernels in it to wait the end of it, or sometimes small buckshot. So it's a hard little ball that makes the flag, throwable more than a foot, basically.
Yeah.
And he fired it and went right through Orlando Brown's face mask and hit him in the eye.
Yes, you remember it well. I can't believe you knew not only the player, but the ref. I am very impressed. And it probably was 25 years ago. That is amazing recall right there. I hope your listeners appreciate that, because I'm guessing there isn't a single listener that would have gotten both sides of that situation, the ref and the player. Very well done.
Do you know how bad Alex. It was as I used AI to look this up?
Yeah.
It was 1999. And the flag weighted with metal BBs went through his face mask, caused severe trauma, including temporary blindness and a multi-year absence from the NFL.
God, I want to know what kind of compensation for that he received.
Brown confronted and shoved Triplett to the ground in the aftermath of it hitting his eye. It resulted in Brown's immediate ejection and an initial indefinite suspension. The suspension was lifted once the severity of the medical situation was understood. He later filed a $200 million lawsuit against the NFL, which they ultimately settled.
Yeah, and we do not have details of the settlement, I bet, but I bet he did well. And he went on to play quite a while longer after that. Orlando Brown had a long career.
Yeah,
that was not a career ender.
The accident forced the NFL to alter the composition of penalty flags, replacing metal shot and BBs with safer fillings like beans or sand.
Alex, we are going to take fantasy emasculation for 500.
Okay. Fantasy football is fun, harmless, and a wonderful hobby for men to have. And men should have hobbies because, you know what? We work our ass off. We support our families. Let's have some fun. It also does not need to take a whole lot of time, but apparently some people think that fantasy is an all-consuming thing and that at some point you may have to choose between fantasy football and the rest of your life. I disagree strongly. Somebody posted the following text message from a guy in fantasy football to his league about why he was not playing this year. Here goes. Gentlemen, after careful consideration, countless sleepless nights, and even more coming soon, I've decided to resign from fantasy football for the season. I've accepted a full-time position as head coach, general manager, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and diaper-changing specialist for my newborn daughter. Unfortunately, my Sundays will now consist of bottles instead of beers, diapers instead of draft boards, and trying to figure out why someone is crying. I appreciate all the trash talk, bad trades, and of course the vetoes. Best of luck to everybody this season. I'll be back next year, sleep deprived, financially irresponsible, and ready to make terrible lineup decisions once again. Boo! Also, this was posted by the guy's wife, Alexis Cox, COX, posted my husband with a blushing emoji and then said, gonna be such a good dad. This is number one bullshit. Don't do this, guys. Let me tell you, with a baby, especially a newborn, you were built to be in fantasy leagues. Plural. You know why? Because you'll be awake at 3 a.m. and you'll be rocking your baby, feeding him or her a bottle, and you will have nothing to do but scroll on your phone and try to scan the waiver wire. How long does your fantasy league take, for God's sakes? Even an in-person draft charge, which I'm a huge fan of when you can pull it off, it's a day. It's one day. Who cares? Your thoughts.
Number one, This guy missed a primo opportunity to draw a line in the sand that says, I'm quitting because you guys have vetoes in this league. Vetoes are the dumbest, worst rule in the history of fantasy sports. He could have just drawn a line in the sand and gone, this is awful. I'm out. That would have been a better, far better excuse than the one that he ended up giving. Okay. You and I have had newborns. Newborn, this is the easy stage.
Yes.
It only gets worse. Your newborn sleeps a lot. You have to do things like burp it and hold it. I mean, those are things you can do. I got a bunch of pictures with my daughter on my chest while I'm playing video games. I got both hands on the controller. I got a baby sleeping on my chest. That's easy. You're telling me you can't get out your phone, make a drop and add a trade offer on your phone? Come on. Yeah. That would have been this. It only gets worse when the kids get older. And this was a primo opportunity that this guy completely missed. Now, I'll credit him for this. That's a pretty well-written send-off. He could have just said, too busy, I'm out. Pretty well-written. This guy's got, he's got a little wordsmith to him, and I do appreciate that.
No credit given because he is such a fucking pussy. And bragging about how he'll be back next year. Oh, really? You think you are, huh? Well, obviously, you've outsourced your own agency in life to your now wife. So it's up to her whether you come back.
You've outsourced your agency.
I'm sorry. Am I wrong?
He thinks he's being a good dad, but clearly, because this came from the wife who is trying to support him.
She's approving of it. Right.
What she thought she was doing was building goodwill with the league by showing that she approves of this action, but it's the exact opposite. She should have stayed out of this entirely because now he looks like he's been cuckolded.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? There are women that play fantasy football. There are women that obsess about it. I know one, for example. She's in five leagues.
I love it.
She's always like texting me asking for, you know, answers. I go, listen to Charge. Don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I can confirm.
Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good. Maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at mybookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Next up.
Alex, I would like 74% for 100, which I guess would be 74.
74%. Charge, that's a number. It's a percentage. Could refer to anything in the world.
Anything.
It refers, though, to something that you and I in particular are fascinated by when it comes to our personal transportation choices. Am I getting you any closer to what the 74% refers to when it comes to you and I?
Well, yep. This is clearly a Tesla related number. Now, it is not, it could be this 74% is the reduction in major accidents when you're using full self-driving versus human steering and human intervention.
Incorrect.
It could be 74% is the average number of average Tesla owner, the percentage of the times they use full self-driving, although I'm at like 90%. 90% of my driving is full self-driving. It is not
ding,
me hands on the wheel.
Ding, ding, ding. I'm at 74%. You're at 90%? That's incredible. I thought my 74% was pretty high. Now, the car keeps stats on this, and I have, the last time I checked it, I was in the low 60s. Now I'm at 74%. And it's just incredible. And I find myself, after being away from my Tesla for a week, like I was in Wisconsin driving a dumb car, I'm an internal combustion engine car. I need help driving. Where am I going? What am I doing? Hey, I've got lane keep assist. That could help. I'll notice if you're nudging out of a lane and I'll gently drive you back into it, but only for a little while. I can only do that for about a minute. Then you're going to have to go back to driving. I've got adaptive cruise control. I can stay a certain amount of, you know, distance back from the car in front of me, but that's about all I can do.
Dumb cars.
I was like so happy to be back in my Tesla and to be able to just one button go, here, you drive me. Because yes. You and I know it's better than us. It's by statistical proven fact, 5 to 7 times better of a driver than we are.
It is looking in 360 degrees 100 times a second.
Yes.
No chance you are doing that.
It sees everything.
It does. And it is uncanny how good the driving is. Zabe, in the rare occasions I do actually drive, this 10% of the time where I actually drive, I'll get distracted by something. I'll be filling with Spotify or whatever, and I'll realize I'm drifting into the shoulder, or I'm it's so obvious that we are worse drivers than the Tesla full self-driving is. And it doesn't have to be Tesla. I say this to my Elon hating friends, and it doesn't have to be Tesla, but I'm never buying another car that doesn't have full self-driving. You know, there's lot of opportunities for it to be something else. And, you know, but until somebody's better than Tesla, I'm only ever buying a Tesla again.
Lucid and Rivian are the two other makers that are trying to keep up with Tesla in this regard. But they're still quite far behind because they don't have the back end, you know, analytic structure of all the data and the video and the experience being funneled into the cloud by what Musk has with Tesla. So they're racing to catch up, but their auto driving is not as good. Tesla's self-driving is getting crazy good all the time. Okay. Next up. I've knocked out the ones we have not chosen yet. Okay.
NFL quarterback development sucks for $500.
It was named today that Kyler Murray is indeed the starting quarterback for Week 1 for your Minnesota Vikings, a fact that Charge told you about a week and a half ago when there was whispers out of camp in Mankato that, oh, J.J. McCarthy's looking better than Kyler Murray. You were like, pish posh, Kyler's the starter. So kudos to you, by the way, Charge, on being ahead of the curve on this nonsense. But now the talk is, well, what happened? Guy missed his entire rookie year with a knee injury, played 10 games last year, actually won 6 of them, and now he's going to be a backup. And somebody listed all the other young quarterbacks, like Anthony Richardson, who was washed out in Indianapolis, Will Levis, who was a horrible reach late first round by the Titans, and a bunch of other guys that have not worked out. And they said, look, you can't accept this as normal. The NFL's quarterback development sucks. Do you agree?
Tom Brady thinks it sucks. He talks a lot about this. Most quarterbacks need a lot of time and a lot of learning, and we don't have the patience because everybody's job's on the line every year. Coaches don't have the patience. GMs don't have the patience. Fans don't have the patience either. We're in an instant gratification society. We want our quarterbacks to be great, all of our draft picks to be great, and they have to be great now. And quarterback is a really, really hard position to play. It's asking a lot to have a quarterback come in and be good right away. There have been countless quarterback careers that have been cut short because they got thrown into action too soon where they may have otherwise been viable. Now, in the case of J.J. McCarthy, he lost the season with injury. Then he was granted the starting job and looked mostly bad. He played 10 games. He missed 7. He won 6 of the 10, but oftentimes it wasn't because of his heroics. It was a Brian Flores defense that got him to the 6 wins. All in all, by almost every metric, J.J. McCarthy was the worst or near the worst starter in the NFL last season. So the Vikings roll in. You got Kyler Murray as a possibility to come to you basically for free because the Cardinals are paying him $30 million this year. And when the Vikings were wooing him, they almost certainly told him, look, Kyler, we can't say it publicly. J.J. McCarthy sucks ass. You know, unless something really strange happens, you're our starter next year. Just come here. You'll be the starter on a Kevin O'Connell offense. You'll do what Sam Darnold did. You'll get paid $100 million on your next team when you go into free agency in 2027. And maybe that'll be the Vikings if things work out right. And so he came to Minnesota. And when J.J. McCarthy, and Murray hasn't looked awesome in the publicly seen parts of training camp, but neither is J.J. McCarthy. And so they held to their word. They made Kyler Murray the starter, announced him the starter. And, you know, in all probability, he will be better this year than J.J. McCarthy was last year.
If quarterbacks were boats, then McCarthy has been pulled from the water and he's been towed to the boatyard for repairs. Justin Fields, former Bear star, pulled from the water in the boatyard. Zach Wilson, high first-round pick for the Jets, pulled from the water, never going to be back on the open water again. Richardson, same deal in Indianapolis. Kenny Pickett, late first-rounder, pulled from the water, not yet in the boatyard, but probably will never sail again. Trey Lance, a boat that sank as soon as you put it out on the water, gone. Mac Jones, a boat that floated for a while and then started taking on water. It's been pulled and is headed to the boatyard. And then Will Levis was the most makeshift, horrible, Tom Sawyer-like raft that should have never been stood on as a boat.
Zabe, almost every single one of those teams have one thing in common.
Which is?
They were quarterback desperate when they made the pick.
Yeah.
They needed, they felt like they had to have the, they had to have a quarterback, and they, in almost every one of those cases, that was, they all felt like they had to get a young quarterback and had to roll the dice. And nine times out of 10, desperate quarterback teams fuck that up.
Said years ago, and I'll stick to it now. That is, if I had a team, if I owned a team, my sort of systematic play, my arbitrage strategy on the position, the most important position, is every year in the draft, third round, we're taking the best quarterback on the board. But we don't need a guy. I'm like, you're right, not now. But he's a rounder, so it's not a super high leverage draft pick. And we're going to keep him on the roster. And don't tell me, well, I need that third left guard. Fucking figure it out. We're carrying three quarterbacks, our starter, a veteran who can at least get us in and out of the huddle without tripping over his fucking shoes as our backup, and we're going to take the third rounder. And as long as the third rounder doesn't piss us off or prove to us that he's a clown that can't play the game, we'll keep him, and we'll just keep running him through. And it'll be Game of Thrones trying to get that third spot, and maybe next year we pick a third rounder who's even better. Or we'll throw that third rounder away. We're going to have a constant pipeline of no worse than third rounders coming in to be a quarterback that we can develop. Because now teams are reaching for first. They're like, well, Kenny Pickett's pretty good, right? Yeah. Oh, he had a great practice at his workout day. Like, let's take him first round. No, he sucks. And teams make that mistake and they throw him in there. And then they have to pull them out of the boat, pull them out of the water and put them in the boatyard.
Yes.
Not.
Yep. Okay. I have not heard your specific third round theory before, but I have been espousing a always draft quarterbacks theory for 30 years on KFAN. Same thing. Always draft quarterbacks. And here's why I like your third round, though. And I might steal this and switch over to this. Third round quarterbacks don't have the full package or they wouldn't be in the third round. But they have a few NFL caliber traits. There's something in that body to make him worthy of a third round pick that translates the NFL game. And you just need to build the rest of it and find out if that player can do, can get the rest of it going. But he's already got some NFL traits that make him good enough to be a third rounder. I like your theory. never stop. Just because you think you've got a capable quarterback is not a good enough reason to stop drafting quarterbacks.
Yeah. And, you know, a third rounder, fans might scream, we're wasting third rounders on quarterbacks we don't need. And I'd say, yeah, well, the year before you flipped a third rounder to move up seven spots to draft somebody else in the second round. Like, stop it with this, oh my God, we can't afford a third rounder. Yeah, you can. You're just choosing not to. Okay, next up.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up, a hell made from grass for $300.
A hell made of grass. So, my beautiful Skag Cheetah Turf Tiger 2 mower from the great folks at Skag Mowers in Mayville, Wisconsin, which is basically on loan to me, hence the promotional endorsement of the mower. It's a great mower, by the way. It's not cheap. It's really an industry standard mower, like mowing companies that specialize in cutting large pieces of grass.
They know it.
They know the Skag Turf Tiger 2 is one of the best in the business. And I really thank the folks at Skag for letting me kind of have this as my mower until I'm done with it. I told them, I said, when I sell this house and move to Arizona, I'm giving you the mower back. I don't want to hear any answers. They're like, don't worry about it. I go, okay, good. Well, the transmission belt snapped on it. It happens. Could happen anytime. It's not
a belt. Every belt wears down eventually.
Right. It happened to snap as I'm cutting probably the least accessible part of the property, this nook and corner. I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to get the truck here? So call the local service place that the mower place that does this. And they said, well, we can come pick it up. And I go, well, that's the thing about picking it up. It's in a really weird spot. So luckily I was able to get the guy that has the truck, who's just an old redneck who's done this for 25 years, to come shimmy the truck up and put down his tow bed over the edge of a guardrail of a dirt road that went behind my property. And I was able to have him help me get the tow chain around my golf cart to then pull the mower with the transmission disengaged so it would roll freely. And I drag it over, and then he winches it and he pulls it onto the deck. And we're like, okay, good. He's got the mower. Here's the hell that I'm living in. Mower's going to be out of service for a couple weeks minimum.
Oh boy.
Cause they can't just go, we'll fix it and bring it back tomorrow. I mean, they could maybe, but they got a lot of mowers they got to work on, right? I have nobody on my street who owns a mower anymore. I have one guy who did mow his own lawn, great dude, in his 60s, unfortunately died suddenly, and they now have a service. The other people on my street are basically retirees, and they don't mow their own grass. And it's 10 acres, so I got to get a zero turn that's got some oomph to it to be able to cut it. I've asked several places. I'm like, so while you're fixing my mower, do you have a loaner program?
Yeah,
like
right.
A car dealership, right. Can I borrow a mower? Yeah. Like, yeah. We really don't do that. And I kind of understand why. Liability. And if you're going to let me mow, I might run over, you know, a log or a rock or a snapping turtle and fuck up the mower. Then what, right?
Not great for the snapping turtle either.
No, terrible for the snapping turtle. So they don't really let you borrow a mower. And here's the real hell of it, is that those services that cut grasses, by the time you get to August, their mowing schedule is tight.
Yes.
They don't have time to add another property. Not only that, but like if there's ever rain that delays them, like you'll see professional mowing services mow in a light rain because they got to get the shit done. They got another 3, 4, 5 lawns later that day or tomorrow or as far as the eye can see. So after making a bunch of calls, I'm quickly coming to realize shit ain't getting mowed for a couple weeks. And the hell for me, Charge, is that I love my grass. I love my property. You've it's seen pristine. Photos of it. It's my pride and joy. And imagine the hell of knowing your grass is growing and green in August because we've had some shots of rain. It's got a lot of crabgrass in there, which I'm not wild about, but it is what it is. But at least it's green and growing in August, which is not always the case. I want to mow it. I want to put some sweet stripes in it. And I want to get after it. And I can't. I am in hell right now. I'm going to sit there looking out my window with one tear rolling down my cheek like Iron Eyes Cody, the guy who cried about the Cleveland River being on fire back in those don't pollute ads of the 70s that aired during football games.
I love it. I love it.
You love it. I hate
things
it.
Off of that.
This is the worst.
I love that you love to mow. I'm part of the reason I moved to Utah was specifically because my wife and I were done mowing and shoveling. We wanted out of that. But I love that you love to mow. I think that's fantastic. And one of the great things about mowing is it's one of the few places where you get uninterrupted thought time. The mowing does not take any mental energy, much like, you know, being in the shower. All the good ideas hit you in the shower. When you're mowing for an hour, you have uninterrupted thought time. And that's probably healthy that we periodically don't have our phone. We don't have any other stimulation. We just get to think about things. So I like that about the mow. Number two, how many things, living beings, do you believe you have killed with your mower over the years? And what is the most advanced biological species you have killed in your mower?
Well, I've told this story before. You haven't heard it, but it's awful. It's one of the worst things that's ever happened, and I still am traumatized by it. I have not really hit hardly any animals. I've seen a snake, I've avoided a snake. I've not hit any birds or fox or groundhogs or chipmunks or squirrels. But okay. one day I did run over a baby fawn.
No.
About the size of a small dog. Beautiful, no. Perfect, little white spots on it, curled up, resting in the grass. I went right over it, and it was,
no.
Oh my God.
Now, horrible.
Here's what happens. And for those that have property and do bush hogging and other stuff, they know that this is a thing. When deer have kids, they will leave them alone to bed down in the grass by themselves because their scent is not developed enough to attract predators. Mom and dad's scent is. So the mom leaves their little one alone for good stretches of the day when they're resting. And I just somehow was not paying attention. It was bad. It was easily the most traumatic, if not second most traumatic, animal related thing I've done at the monogamous compound. The other one was when I had to trap a bunch of sparrows that were invading my purple martin nest and then drown them because I was told that is one of the more humane ways of killing them. You're allowed to kill them. Wow. They are an invasive species. But yeah. Basically I had to like be ISIS for sparrows. I had to drop the fucking cage into a bucket of water and know in my heart that they were drowning. Fucking horrible. So
that's awful. And then you had to pull the cage out. I assume you didn't leave the cage down there.
Then I went and I put the dead sparrow on a little log pile thinking, well, there could be an animal that would eat this. So, circle of life. I tried to make a win out of it going, well, you know, someone's going to eat this. Like, this is good sparrow right here. You might want this. A little wet, but you know, chewy.
There is no meat on a sparrow. That's not, sparrow is not good eaten.
By the way, the actor that purportedly played Iron Eyes Cody, a Native American, was Sicilian. He was Italian American.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Aspera de Cordi. I believe The Sopranos also made reference to this, that Iron Eyes Cody was actually an Italian. Okay, let's run through couple and then we'll wrap it up.
All right. By the way, Roxy mowed over a baby rabbit's nest.
Oh, God. Oh, God. The whole nest. Oh, no.
And that was a major. I'm in Utah now. Because Roxy's like, I can't mow any. You know, we had hit a lot of stuff in our backyard. You were at our Plymouth house once. We had frogs. Yeah. We had snakes. You hit stuff.
Yeah.
Baby rabbit nest. Oh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
Let's go to the stench of Russini. 500.
So today at Patriots camp, a reporter dared to go there and asked Vrabel about his off-season counseling that he said he was going to enter in the wake of the Rossini scandal, and asked whether or not he had learned anything from it. It was, according to those who were there, as the kids like to say, awkward AF. But good for them, good for that reporter actually going there. Okay, you put out in a statement, I'm going to seek counseling to be better. All right, how'd it go? What'd you learn? You know, they weren't prying into, so are you and your wife, Jen, having sex again? What's going on there? It wasn't in that regard. But it was just like a, hey, you're not just going to get to walk away from this entirely. And Vrabel's answer was, you know, the kind of fake chipper upbeat. Oh, yeah, no, we're always looking to be better. That's myself included. And da, 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 and then quickly pivoted into combo blocks as quick as he could to bring it back to football. As a related Rossini thing, The Athletic said they were going to come out with the conclusions of their investigation on the conduct of their supposedly impartial journalist, Ms. Rossini, their most highest paid employee, nearly $1 million a year, back in mid-June. They told Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk, we'll have our report done in the next 2 weeks. Well, tick tock, tick tock. Yeah. The speculation is now that The Athletic will never release that investigation because it'd be too explosive and it would be like a fireworks stand going up in flames with more stuff shooting off left and right because she was definitely in the circles, so to speak, in the NFL. Your thoughts on the stench of Rossini that will not go away?
Let's also, you know, it's very possible that, you know, many people believe that the Rossini thing is just the tip of the iceberg on fraud. Things like voting for coach of the year, offensive player of the year, that there is, you know, that these people, their votes are available to be had
for sale,
that
for information, for sexual affairs, for maybe money. Yep.
For money, right? On prediction markets, right? You know, who's going to get rookie of the year, AP voters? There's money to be had and favors to be traded for. It's a bargaining chip that has been used, and it's very possible that Rossini is just the beginning of this, and that this is so explosive and may include many other athletic journalists that they are not going to release it. I don't think they ever will. Also possible, Rossini's side is currently suing them or is threatening legal action if they do. That is possible. And Rossini's case would be very interesting if this is true. So maybe the reason they haven't released it is because Rossini's battling to keep it closed. And one of the levers she's using is, you guys knew I was doing this. Oh. And you didn't do anything about it until it blew up nationally. And so that is possible too, right? So this is, you know, that could be a plausible reason why it hasn't been released as well.
You know what I call that situation, Charge? And by the way, brilliant spin ahead to see that, because I didn't really even think about that. But now that you do, you know what I like to call that situation? It's a Mr. Chow situation from The Hangover. Remember when they locked Mr. Chow in the back of the trunk naked?
Yes.
What was the thing he did the first chance he got? He jumped out of the back of the trunk, buck naked, and then wrapped his legs around Alan's neck like a spider monkey and started wailing him with a tire iron, screaming, you want to fuck on me? You want to fuck me? Ow, ow. Wham, wham, wham. So obviously there is potential for Rossini to go, oh, okay. This is what you're going to do? Well, how about this? And then she unfurls a big bag of receipts, like you said.
Yep.
Interesting.
Very possible.
Well, there's a stench. Right. There's a stench that's not going away.
We got time.
Final
we got time
three.
For another one?
I'm going to pick the final three, and then you'll have the last word. Ross Tucker has been named to elevate to the Iron Eagle team on CBS in the wake of Romo getting indefinitely suspended. This is a great thing. Now, I'm biased a bit to Ross because he spent a lot of time as a guest on my shows. But he's a really good down-to-earth guy. If you listen to how he calls a game, He has a natural way of relaying what's going on to people without it being shtick, and he's actually quite good. He's very smart. Guy played at Columbia before he made the NFL and played for a number of years. So very happy for him to be up assigned to really what a ride. He gets the second best ride in all of NFL, the great Iron Eagle. So that's a great team right there.
Iron Eagle's really good, and actually his kid's really good too.
Next
here's what I like about like about Ross Tucker, and part of the reason that I think Ross Tucker is as good as he is because he went out of his way to create a YouTube channel and social media where he's explaining plays and he's explaining why this player's great and you know how this play broke down. So he took all of these reps before he was in the booth explaining to people. And I think he really understands how to explain what's happening in a way that's not condescending, that isn't over our head with technical jargon and other things, but in a way that's gratifying to us. And so Ross Tucker, tip of the hat and well-deserved. And I think he's going to be great.
And he did a ton of sports radio shows as a guest, not just mine. So he understood how to fit into the sports talk mentality and conversation style. And he's able to bring that then to calling a game without it being too far off the field or insufferable. And that's a huge value. In other words, he became a broadcaster. Now he's just doing games. So many ex-players, they're thrown into the analyst booth and they're very stiff and they feel like they need to say they got to run the ball north and south in order to set up the pass. Nobody cares. By the way, he played at Princeton, not Columbia. I apologize sincerely for that. He's a Princeton Tiger. So there you go. Okay, next to last topic for me, Berman's ass. Have you seen the viral videos of Chris Berman, beloved icon of ESPN, working his way towards a 50-year career before he finally retires in 2028? Walking around signing autographs, he looked like one of the cartoons in Monsters, Inc. with a giant upper torso, spindly little legs, and literally no ass. If you were to look at his pants and had a gun to your head saying what size are those pants, you'd say 26 32. Like, they're upside down. The waist is upside down size wise from the length. Then as the more I looked at him, I'm like, well, maybe his ass has migrated north. Like, maybe it's above his belt line. Maybe he was wearing his belt way too long. I don't know. Charge, do you have any operative theories on this?
I don't think I've ever seen a case of asslessness as much as I have with Chris Berman, ever, in anybody. I mean, just like, if you go to this Minnesota State Fair with 250,000 people a day, and you just do nothing but look at ass, you'll never see a butt that's missing like Chris Berman's. What he should do, when I was in LA 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, they have big billboards for ass jobs.
No.
Where women mostly get bigger asses. They fill out the ass because they want a bigger ass. Chris Berman should become the ass job spokesman, right? He should go get an ass job and capitalize on this. You know, it's a great opportunity for him to both get an ass and get paid at the same time.
Do you know if women go to these clinics that are in like a strip mall, that are not very well vetted, they don't have real doctors, they're very shady, they're cheap for cosmetic surgery. I've heard of women dying from ass jobs in which their ass was injected with essentially the equivalent of concrete. And I'm just holy shit. Yes.
How can that...
I don't know.
How can that even be?
The equivalent. I don't know. Not actual concrete, but maybe liquefied materials, precursor to concrete. The character I'm thinking of is the green one with the white eye, with the one eyeball, Mike Wazowski in Monsters, Inc. That's who
voiced by?
Me of. Don't know.
Billy Crystal.
No way. Look at you. All right. Finally, Bummer Bumble, the female-led, female-oriented online dating app Bumble, where the women were given the power, purportedly, this is their whole hook, we're giving women the power to choose you. So they don't have to deal with a bunch of creepazoids swiping on them and sending messages and love bombing them when they already got the ick just looking at your profile. The power is in the women's hands. Well, Bumble found out that the women didn't like that, actually. They didn't like being in charge because to be in charge and then to request somebody respond back inevitably resulted in this horrible thing we all know called as rejection.
Yeah, right.
And the women were like, oh, no, I do not like this.
They want to be on the other side of it perpetually.
Right, right. So now Bumble announced that they are basically doing away with that feature and that men will be able to go ahead and initiate on Bumble, to which many people said, so what's the point? You're not Farmers Only. You're not J-Date. You're not Black People Meet. You don't have any specific hook here. What are you?
What are you? Yeah, that's now. Yeah, now they're just Match.com. That's all they are at this point because they've lost their. What was the
They're not Christian Mingle either. That's right. Another one. I'm thinking of all the different specific nodes. And all of them are corrupted by people who are not what they purport to be. Don't think on Farmers Only, you're really going to get farmers and farm girls only.
Why wouldn't you? Because if you're not a farmer, isn't it going to become readily apparent that you don't know what a thresher is? And, you know, I mean, you know, the jig's going to be up really fast.
What kind of combine you're running? I got a John Deere. John Deere doesn't make those. Only International Harvest. it's a John Deere subsidiary, really. I mean, it's not really
right.
Horny dudes with a farm girl fetish are going to infiltrate and do whatever it takes to bag one. That's just human nature. It's part of why Bumble didn't work, because you know what the men did on Bumble? They swiped on anything fuckable above a 5, and they just sat and waited to see what responses rolled in, and then they were very choosy about, like, okay, her, why not? And they hit it and they quit it and they move on. And that was no good for the women. So it was a bad dynamic. Women don't operate like that. Women will not swipe. They won't batch swipe on a bunch of dudes that are basically fuckable and then decide which ones they're horny enough for. They operate differently. The model doesn't work for them.
I've seen data that says that women discriminate on appearance on online dating apps at a far, far higher rate than men discriminate on appearance.
Yeah.
And I believe that that is absolutely true. One, because men will hit almost anything. And two, I think women are every bit as shallow, at least initially, as men can be. But, you know, eventually I think men can win over, you know, we've seen ugly guys with beautiful women. I think eventually you can win them over through various things, power, fame, money, genital size. I mean, I think you have some options in time. You can get there, but initially women are every bit as discriminatory as men.
You ever heard of Raya?
No.
Ever heard of the League?
Well, the TV show, The League.
Ever heard of Luxie?
Nope.
These are all top-end, elite, exclusive dating platforms.
Mm.
Raya is private, membership-based. It requires an invitation, and you must apply. It's rigorous, and they have a low acceptance rate of only about 8%. Caters to celebrities, high-profile creatives, professional athletes, and models.
Wow.
So there's a whole nother category that is up there, but it's hard to get at.
Okay. I didn't know that. I should have known there were private clubs just for this. So you don't have to mingle with the masses, right?
Oh, yeah.
That does not surprise me that is a real thing.
I would imagine, though, the shallow, horrible people that are beautiful, but otherwise horrible, shallow people on those high-end dating sites is got to be a lot. You know?
Yeah, probably a lot. Well, that's what they should be filtering out, though. They should be filtering out the shallow people
for
me. You can't
filter out shallow. You can't. You don't know how to do that.
I don't know. You're vapid. I don't know. I'd like, you know, if you're just there to hook up with a rich guy, I don't know. I'd like to think that they're going to,
how do you test for whether somebody's interesting or not? Hmm. Or has a good original thought or not?
Well, I want to believe, I'm assuming there's an interview process, right? I have to turn over bank statements. I have to, you know, expose my social
credit
media,
score,
blah,
bank
blah,
statement,
blah.
Those are all objective scoreboards. Whether you're hot or not, fit and shape, good looking, that's also easily discernible by eye. It's that last 1% that's hard to sort of suss out.
Well, that's true. I want them to do that. Here's a quick, very quick story for you. When I got divorced and before I was seeing Roxy, there was a matchmaking service in the Twin Cities that wanted to work with me and have me be their public endorser.
Of course.
And I briefly was considering it because I didn't want to put my profile out on like match.com or something, right? Because I don't want, you know, that would go social. And
okay, fans, Paul Charchin's out there. He's what's happening? Did he get divorced? What's going on? The whisper.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I don't want any of that.
Yeah.
So I thought about using them. Would you care to guess what this matchmaker was charging per match?
It probably rhymed with thousand.
$50,000.
Shut the front door. What constitutes
$50,000? Like, just what the?
What constitutes a match? Actually getting married?
No, this was for, you know, this was her cultivating her extensive network of highly eligible people, right? And just making the introduction was a cashable event for her. She wanted 50 grand. Like, that's...
okay. And you were like, yeah, no. Was she expecting you as the celebrity endorser to end up coughing up 50 grand if she found you a hot smoking...
Well, the inference was, we didn't get very far into this, the inference was that she was going to at least start me for free. I would air a bunch of spots for her. I would voice a bunch of spots for her. And then if it turned out well, she would continue her matchmaking services for me. And eventually it was like, I can't go on the air and advocate for you when the first thing anybody's going to do is ask how much you charge and it's $50,000. Right. I'm going to look like an ass. I'm out.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. So anything you'd like to add on the way out the door, Charge? You've been very generous with your time today.
Farmers only. I'll say this, country girls in boots.
Yeah, it's hot as shit. Everyone wants to believe in the country girl archetype of the beautiful, mostly chaste farmer's girl with pigtails, red checkered shirt that is tied off in a knot to show off her midriff and her boobies and boots that don't smell like pig shit. That's the dream. That's the archetype. The reality, though, of many women who grow up on a working farm and are busting their hump, they don't look like that. they're hefty enough to play left guard on a local high school football team, and they smell vaguely like, you know, Slim Jims and Tito's. It's not pretty.
This is where the DJ talks. That's what we want to believe in our head and do
not
take
it away. I love the fact
that
you're on. I can see you right now looking down at your computer. You're already on Farmers Only. You found yourself a real gem, a girl you knew in high school to begin with, and has been in your orbit. Roxy is the shit, man. She's awesome.
She's the best. She is the best. And so are you, my friend. It's been a blast. We will do this again next week, I am sure.
Fantasy Football World Show is how you reach them on Twitter at Fantasy FF World Show. And of course, the website is there as well. Make sure to sign up to the RSS feed so you can listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Same old great Paul Charchian Fantasy Football Show. New name, who dis? The show goes on. You're the man, Charge. I'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Thanks, my friend. Bye-bye.
He's insane, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Okay, so good day. Our topic today is music.
That's right, because my brother and I are now experts in the field,
yeah.
Eh?
Right, because we're a band now.
The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL, both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right.
and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.